Hi, this is Rachel Kramer Bussell. And I am at a Starbucks in Manhattan, and I am hosting episode 2 of our RKB Online Book Club with Blog Talk Radio. And my first guest is Emerald. Hi, Emerald.
Hi, Rachel, and everyone listening. How are you?
I'm good. Emerald has been in several of my anthologies, and we're not going to talk about all of them today, but we are going to talk about some of them, specifically the latest ones, which are Gotta Have It, 69 Stories of Fun and Sex, and Best Bondage Erotica, 2011. So I guess I'm going to start with a general question. Emerald, like, how long have you been writing erotica, and how did you get started?
Sure. Well, I've been writing erotica since about 2005, somewhere around there. I was in my mid-20s when I made the shift from writing not erotica to writing erotica. And for me, it really coincided with a very personal evolution in my own sexuality. Personally, I've been a writer since I was 7. I wasn't writing erotica back then, of course. And but at a time in my own, as I mentioned, personal life, I was having kind of a sexual revelation, and so it really doesn't surprise me that the two kind of merged in me. I'd been writing for so long, and I had just left a graduate program, a Master of Fine Arts program in creative writing, and so I was kind of on my own in the writing realm, and I just felt like, gee, what if I wrote about sex? What if I wrote about it explicitly? And I felt like this wasn't something very many people did, but I realized, well, some people do it. You know, it's out there. And so I just kind of started doing it myself.
And was it easier than you thought it would be? Was it harder? Did it just flow?
That's a really good question.
What would you say about that?
I don't think I had any expectations. I really, aside from, I do remember that I felt like, is this allowed? There was just a part of me that thought, well, could I really do that? Can you really speak that explicitly? And I had a very good friend at the time who was kind of a porn connoisseur. He was very into video pornography and explicit sexual kinds of materials. And I wrote something, and I was really holding back. And I let him read it, and I said, what do you think? And he got done, and he said, that's it. And that kind of propelled me into realizing that, yes, this was allowed. And if I was going to do this, then the holding back was not only not necessary, it wasn't really a part of what I was doing, you know. So when he said that, it really kind of, I'm sure he didn't mean this, but it gave me permission in a way to be as explicit as I wanted to. So I didn't know what to expect. I didn't have any expectations. I just started writing what came to me, no pun intended. So,
it's interesting because I feel like that could have gone, you know, if he hadn't been enthusiastic, and I'm sure that mm-hmm. happens, that initial judgment, you know, if someone has a negative reaction, that
yes.
a lot of people, I think, then say, oh, it wasn't any good, or I shouldn't be doing this, or whatever. So I'm glad, certainly in your case, that it was a positive thing. I think we have another caller coming in, so I'm going to bring them on. Hello.
Hi, this is Mercy Loomis. Hello.
Hi.
Hi. This is Mercy Loomis. I'm also one of the authors in Gotta Have It.
Hi. This is Rachel. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. I guess I'm going to ask you the same question I just asked Emerald. How did you get started writing erotica and why?
I actually kind of got started writing erotica as part of a novel I was working on, just some really great sexual tension between two of the characters, and decided to run with it. And as far as doing just pure erotica short stories, in 2009 I had gotten laid off of my job and decided I was going to work on writing while I was looking for another job, and looked around for open markets, and erotica and romance were really about it, as far as markets that were actively looking for specific things. And so I just started turning out stories for it, and it just was a lot of fun.
cool. I think it's interesting because, you know, for me, I got started because I was reading a lot of erotica, so I knew that there was a market for it, and I wrote specifically for certain calls that I was seeing. I'm not sure if I hadn't been exposed to that, if I would have started writing, you know, mm-hmm. or writing that kind of stuff. So I think for some people, I mean, knowing that other people are doing it is an encouragement. I'm going to bring on our next person, who I believe is Tennille Brown.
Yes.
Hello, Tennille.
Hi.
Hi. I'm getting to meet a lot of our callers for the first time through these chats. I mean, meet on the phone, so it's a lot of fun for me. Hi, Tennille. I've been reading your stuff for a long time. I don't know exactly how long. I'm going to ask you the same question. How did you get started writing erotica, and what prompted you to start doing it?
It's probably the same thing you said. Someone gave me a book of erotica as a gift when I was probably about 19 or 20, and I read it, and I enjoyed it. It was an anthology, and I was writing at the time, but I was writing mostly regular fiction and poetry, and I just looked at it, and I was like, you know, I could do this, and I wrote a story, and I probably passed it around to friends, and they enjoyed it, and I ended up sending the story out probably over the next few years, and it got rejected and rejected and rejected, and it sold in 2001, and I just kept going with it.
Congratulations.
Started writing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Can I ask what it was, and where did it get published?
It was Midnight Letter to Fran, and it got published online at kuma2.net, and it ended up getting picked up by Zane for her first chocolate flavor anthology.
Oh, that's a great story, especially
wow.
Because, like I was saying earlier, that you know, I think that sometimes early rejection, a lot of people, they then say, oh, okay, I'm going to put this away and never do it again.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's great that you kept going. And that's something I tell people. I mean, I edit a lot of anthologies, and sometimes something just doesn't quite fit the theme, or it doesn't fit because I have something similar. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I enjoy seeing people's work evolve and seeing, you know, or sometimes I see something that I rejected that someone else picks up or whatever. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's a really interesting aspect of it.
I think what really helped me was that a lot of editors saw it, and instead of just saying, you know, no, they took the time to write a little note, you know, it didn't fit, or you can fix this, and I don't know why, you know, what made them put those things there, but it was really that made me keep going, because if I just didn't know, if it was just no, I probably would have thought that it was just, you know, not my thing, and I probably would have stopped, but I happened, you know, upon officer just went the extra mile with it. So.
That's really inspiring. So you guys have all been doing it for at least a few years. Do you have any advice for people who want to write erotica or anything, you know, that you wish you'd known when you started? either of those.
I guess I'll start. I would say research, know your market, read a lot. You know. Know what's missing and know what people want.
Is there anything you wish you'd known?
I'm not sure. I'm sure there's a lot I wish I'd known, but
well, I also think
the
market has evolved a lot since then. Like, I think there's more, especially with the internet and just different kinds of markets. I think there's more, say, from 2001 to now, I think there are more markets.
Mm-hmm.
I would say.
Definitely.
It's probably certainly easier to find the markets now.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, you know, Erotica Readers and Writers Association and a few other places like that are aggregators are incredibly helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is Emerald, and I was going to say that too. When I don't even frankly remember how I discovered the Erotica Readers and Writers Association, but I remember that when I did, it became almost the singular resource for me. It has
mm-hmm.
the calls for submission, and it just had a bunch of advice about things as simple as writing cover letters, which I didn't feel like I knew that much about, especially not having any publication credits yet. You know, I didn't know exactly what to say because there wasn't that to include. And I found it very helpful and accessible, very, you know, reassuring. It didn't seem like there was any pretentiousness and up on the, well, we're published authors. It was just very accessible, and I took a lot of advice from the Erotica Readers and Writers Association. I highly recommend it.
Mm-hmm. Me too. And everyone, the URL is erotica-readers, erotica-readers.com. And that, I think it continues to be really, I would say, the number one resource for people wanting to know about erotica. And it's where I post my calls. I mean, it has sort of a little bit of something for everyone, from articles about writing erotica to places where you can actually send your work and get it published. And it just has a really broad depth of information. And I think that's great. I mean, I wish, like, all genres had that, because I think sometimes it can be really hard to find things when everything is scattered all over the internet, you know, and you're kind of stumbling along looking for stuff.
Indeed.
What was I going to say? Oh, cover letters. That is not something I was planning to talk about, but I will say, like, I think I can speak for myself. I can say, like, you don't need to write a long cover letter, but, like, you should write something rather than just, here's my submission. But, you know, I think that people sometimes overthink some part of the process. And I think it, for me, I would say, like, as long as you're following my guidelines, which are pretty specific, and even if you mess up one thing, I mean, if I say it should be double-spaced, and if you wind up single-spacing it, but it's otherwise, like, a brilliant story, that's really not going to be the end of the world. But I think it shows that you've taken the time to actually read what the person wrote and what they're looking for. And I think, to me, that is something I look for with people, especially people I'm going to be working with again and again, just that they respect my time and the effort that I've put in.
And kind of along with that, on cover letters, it's really just brief and professional. Is the best thing you can do. You know, don't go into long stories. Don't talk about how, you know, erotica has changed your life. Just keep it short, sweet, and professional.
Yeah. And I would also say really, really, because I think we all have insecurities, but don't put those this should be your, I mean, you don't have to say, I'm the best writer in the world, and don't say that, but don't also say, I'm not really sure if this is very good. I think this might not work. This is way under or way over your suggested word count, you know, by 2,000 words. I mean, don't do those things, because I see those things fair, not often, but sometimes, and it, you know, that's my first impression of you, or even if you've submitted before, that's my first impression of you for this specific book. And if you're sort of prefacing it by saying, you know, I'm not really sure if this is very good, then I'm not going to be very sure, you know, it's good. And I think you have to leave that to the editor's discretion to make that judgment. And I think something else people should remember is that it is a judgment. You know, even with something like Best Bondage Erotica, which Tennille and Emerald have stories in, I'm just trying to go over to make sure I'm not skipping anyone. You know, Best, I think people need to realize that's best as, you know, decided basically by me. I mean, it's a subjective thing, and I would never say that's, like, you know, I know everything. I think there is a lot of human, but just, you know, choice that goes into that process. And for me, I think the interesting and sort of positive and negative thing about putting out a public call is that you can't just specify, I want this kind of story and this kind of story and this kind of story. You can suggest the types of things you're looking for, but then it's really up to people to submit things that, you know, I really do decide as I sit and read them, does this work? Is this unusual? Is this, do I like this? You know, I'm not coming into it so much with a preconceived notion. I mean, sometimes I might have elements that I'm trying to balance. Like, I wouldn't want all male or all female submissives or you know, or tops in a book like that, because I want to mix it up. But I don't really have some. I'm not saying I want this many handcuffs and this many, you know, tapes of rope and this many. You know, it's more, do the stories play off each other and do they work together? And I think you can research, but I also think staying true to the kinds of things that you are drawn to write is probably the better advice, because I think it's very hard to force your voice to sound like someone else's voice. And even if you, that doesn't mean like don't mix it up, but I think that sometimes people try to, you know, change that personal aspect to try to fit a certain thing that they think is required. And I would say there's really nothing required per se beyond the, you know, certain things I put in the guidelines. I don't like underage characters or no incest or whatever. But, you know, beyond that, I think really anything is fair game. But that was a really long sentence. Sorry about that. So,
It also goes back a little bit to the advice for people who want to write is, while you're looking at calls that can be somewhat specific, like the please sir, please ma'am, where it's got to be, you know, this combination of people, don't let that get in your way. I look at those as almost like a puzzle, because it's like, okay, I have this, you know, this start, to start with. Where is my interest in that? You know, because you've got to find that thing that resonates with you, that makes the story exciting for you to write. Because if it's not, then it's not going to be exciting to read. So even though you've got sometimes, I don't even want to call them constraints, but even just, you know, you have certain things that you need to fulfill for that particular call, you've still got to find that spark in it that makes it interesting for you, and not just because, oh, I'm going to write this because this is what they asked for and this is what's popular right now. You've got to find that personal thing.
I definitely agree with that. And I think there really is, even though it might look daunting, it might look like it is very specific, there really is such a range. And I've seen that when I've done anthologies that are very specific, that are about a single topic, but the authors have taken that topic that might look constraining, like spanking, and taken it to just a whole new level, because mm-hmm. they've brought an element of creativity or they've brought something that I would never have thought of. And that is certainly something that, as an editor, I give a lot of notice to. If it's something I've, you know, never heard of or never thought of, and that maybe fits the theme, but in a kind of offbeat way. And, of course, at the moment, I don't have an example in my head of what that would be. But, you know, I think if your style, if you're naturally bring a lot of humor, that, you know, go with that. Now, that doesn't mean I wouldn't do a book of 20 stories that are all humorous unless the theme was humor. But, you know, I think you can't. That doesn't mean just because I said that, like, try to make it funny. But, you know, I think if that works for the voice of the story and that's what you're drawn to, then, you know, go for it. And I think sometimes you don't know what that is until you start writing. I've found that sometimes I'm trying to write for a specific theme and the story just comes out differently than that. Like, it comes out as something else, and that's okay, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does anyone want to talk about either of your stories, you know, specific, how you came to write your specific story in either Best Bondage Erotica 2011 or Gotta Have It?
Sure. Who wants to go first?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go first.
All right.
This is Mercy.
Okay.
And the story is called Good Neighbors. And kind of just in short, it's in Gotta Have It. It's just in real short, it's a scene where a woman is in a motel room and she hears the neighbors next door having sex. And the what actually sparked that story for me was watching the original version of The Wicker Man, which is a horror movie, but there's a scene in it where the, you know, the hero is in sort of like the hotel on this little island, and the landlord's daughter is next door, and she's trying to seduce him by singing at him through the wall and kind of pounding on the wall. And it's a really well done scene, and I was just wanted to take that and kind of play with it and take it in a different direction.
I like that. I like when people take something that, you know, isn't about erotica per se, or isn't about sex per se, or is something in pop culture, and then use it to make something totally new.
Mm-hmm.
I think that can be really fun, and I also think it's, I mean, you could say this about any kind of fiction, but I think erotica especially, I mean, you could just be walking down the street or in a store and get inspired. I just wrote a story about a chocolate shop inspired by, my friend works in a chocolate shop, and I was in there, and it was just so sensual, and
mm-hmm.
and I was just thinking about, like, and I wrote it from a male point of view, but just I was thinking about someone walking into a store like that and just being, you know, inundated by all these smells and tastes, and I think that, you know, that can really help. I mean, I know certainly over the 10, 11 years that I've been writing erotica, sometimes it's gotten harder because I feel like, oh, I've read that or I've written that, and I'm always looking for something that's a little bit different. Emerald, do you want to talk about either or both of your stories?
Sure. Well, relative anonymity is in Best Bondage Erotica 2011, and it's a male-male story for the most part, even though the narrator is actually female. She's observing. And it was actually it's the first male-male story I've ever written. So I was really delighted that you wanted to put it in Best Bondage Erotica. And it's funny because as far as the storyline, it's one of the least autobiographical stories I've ever written. Not that it's assumed that any of this is autobiographical, but, you know, it's about a woman who is married. I've never been married, and she's interacting with her former husband, who is now in a relationship with a man. And not only is it a relationship with a man, it's a kinky relationship. There's bondage going on, obviously. And paradoxically, even though there's, you know, I have very little of that in my personal experience. Again, I've never been married, and my ex-husband, therefore, has never come to me with that information. But the story I felt really close to this story. And I don't, that's a little hard to explain, perhaps especially for someone who doesn't write, but it's just a story that I felt extremely close to and intimate with, and something about it I really loved. And so there's some surprise in the story and some different aspects, and there's one of them is that it takes place in a small town, and that I do have experience with. I did grow up in the Midwest, and the town I grew up in wasn't that small, but there were a lot surrounding it, so I feel fairly familiar with the Midwestern small town kind of atmosphere. And I do feel that not to be too heavy in this discussion, but different sexual orientations can seem, you know, that situation can seem very extremely challenging in that kind of environment, in a small town where everybody knows each other, and where there might be some different prominence of perspectives that might not seem the same in larger cities with a lot more people. And so that's there's an overshadowing of that in the story, but what I really wanted to convey in that story, or it wasn't even that I wanted to convey it, what I felt was coming through me as I was writing it was the love in it, that even though there is challenge, or there can be challenge in that situation, there's a lot of love there. There's a lot of love between the men with whom the sex scene is occurring, and there's a lot of love in her and her former husband's relationship. So I see it really as a story of love, not like typical, perhaps perceived romantic love necessarily, but just a lot of love between the people involved, and that's what the story is about, really, to me, is the support and love there.
I think that's interesting in two things especially. One is that I think there are people who hear, oh, erotica, and they really think that there's an absence of love or other kinds of emotions, that, that they think that it's only about, you know, the sexual side of it. And you know, sometimes it is. Like, I'm not trying to pit one against the other, but I think in a lot of the stories, there's both. And I think the other thing that to me was really interesting is that you said that you felt very close to it. And I think that I've found that even when I'm writing about something that is completely fictional, that might be about characters who are very different from me in various ways, often those are the times when the things that are similar about me and those characters pop out at me because I'm not expecting them. Like, I'm expecting, you know, it to be something really foreign to me in a way, and then I'll find that there is a nuance, whether it's some little tidbit where I do draw from a real life scenario or emotion, or whether I just feel this like kinship with something that that character is going through.
That is a really interesting thing. I like that.
Tennille, do you want to talk about your story in Fast Bondage Erotica? You don't have to, but.
Oh, yeah, definitely. My story is called Reasoning. It was in Best Bondage 2011. And what's kind of funny to me about it is that, as a general rule, you know, I don't write autobiographically. It's probably only the second erotic story that I've done that's been anything close to it. But at the same time, writing is therapeutic for me. So the story is about a husband and a wife in a bed. The husband and the wife had split up for a time, and the husband went his way and the wife went her way, and they both dated. Except that the wife stayed in the house, and she stayed, you know, with the bed, and she had another lover. And the husband knew about it, but when he returned and they got back together, he had these hang-ups about the bed. And it's based on a true story, and, you know, I was having issues with my husband in this bed after, you know, we split up, got back together, and all of a sudden he had the backache, you know, this, that, and the other. But the way I wanted to go about it with Best Bondage was, you know, I wanted them, the couple, to take care of the problem, but in a more creative way, ended up tying the husband to the bed, kind of forcing him to deal with the issue. You know, she tied him to the bed, she spanked him, and, you know, in the end, he ended up enjoying it. So he looked at the bed in a totally different way. But the real life story is that our same bed ended up being to the store by our dog. So the bed got dealt with in both situations for that one. So.
Well, I think one of the things that I think is really interesting is that in, you know, fiction, you can basically make, you know, whatever you want to happen, happen. And I think sometimes I see erotica where people take that and they sort of gloss over all the sort of messy parts of life. Like, they, like, everything is sort of fantastic and wonderful and everyone's having a great time. And it's not that there's anything wrong with that, but I think, like, there, that tension, which is something I see in a lot of your stories, Tennille, where there's some sort of either a misunderstanding or a miscommunication. Maybe that's not the right word, but there is a conflict between either a couple or two people, and they find a way to resolve it, and it's not always, you know, perfect. It's often sort of a little bittersweet, I would say, but I think that's what makes it interesting, because it does have that element of realism.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I try to bring to it. I don't want it to be all happy ending. I don't want it to be all, you know, I met this person in a nightclub, and we had a kind of, I try to bring something literary to it. I try to bring, you know, all sorts of elements to it to make it different, to make it more real, and to make it fun writing.
I think that really stands out. And I think that what you do really well is it's real, but then it's also sexy. You know, because I think then sometimes people err on the other side, and it's so real that they kind of lose the fact that it's also supposed to be erotica. And I think you have, it's a tension when you're trying to do both of those at the same time. I I find it can be challenging because, you know, those are two sort of different elements. But I think your stories work in, on both levels. And I think they give you something to think about. Like, at the end, you're like, oh, you know, it's like you care about the characters.
Mm-hmm. And I thank you. That's a wonderful comment. I mean, compliment coming from you. And a lot of, I mean, it's what I try to do, but a lot of times I find that it happens and it surprises even me. But, I mean, it's great to hear that people look at it that way and people enjoy the stories.
Have any of you ever continued a story or resurrected a character in another story? Emerald, I'm pretty sure you have.
Indeed.
Can you talk about that and what that process was like? And did you do it again? Like, would you keep going with those characters ever?
Sure. Yes, my story in Passion that you edited, the erotic romance anthology, is called If. And when I started to write a story for your other, another erotic romance anthology that you have forthcoming called Obsessed, I had had this idea of these characters in If. It was, I wouldn't say that it wasn't that the storyline was unfinished. It was just that I felt that there was so much more potential there. There was kind of a, in If, there was a bit of a, it's a love triangle, if you will. And the female narrator is very in love with her boyfriend of 3 years, but she meets someone else to whom she's intensely attracted. And so the story is, it goes, you know, through that situation and how she deals with it. And in the sequel, if you will, that is forthcoming and Obsessed, which is called Then, she, you know, she and her boyfriend encounter this gentleman again because he's a mutual, he has some mutual friends of theirs, which is how she met him in the first place. And it just kind of becomes, you know, something more that could happen. You know, they had, quote unquote, resolved things, and that's fine, but that's not static, of course. And it just, I just felt, incidentally, If is a little bit more on the autobiographical side. And so Then was just kind of carrying it on as far as what else might happen, and some degree of fantasy, of course. But
would you say it was easier to write the second story because you already had written the first one, or was it harder or equally?
I feel it was easier because I already knew these characters and I cared about all of them a lot. Again, there's some degree of autobiography, so they are based on people that I really do care about, myself included. But it was easier because it was really almost like, I mean, I wouldn't say it was one story. I like that they're both completely self-contained within each one, but I just thought, you know, what else could happen between these characters? And so the characters were already there, the background was already there, and it was, you know, to make it a self-contained story, the second one had a little bit of background covering what happened in the first story. But then it just became, you know, I already know these people, and they already know each other, and so this seems like something else that could happen. It was the first time I'd done that. It was the first time I had continued characters, so to speak. But it really seemed to just come forth. And it's certainly not something I would be opposed to doing it again, but that was the first time the inspiration had really been there to do so. It hadn't happened before where I thought, I don't feel like I'm quite done with these characters, let's do something more with them. But then it just really came forward. It made sense. And the fact that it was to you again for another erotic romance anthology was coincidence, but I like the way that's worked, that it's your erotic romance anthology, yeah, and then your next erotic romance anthology is the sequel.
For those who want to read those, Passion is out, and Obsessed will be out by late July. I can't remember if I've ever done it, but it's something that I'm intrigued by, especially when I get writer's block, and I'm like, who am I going to write about, or I'm just writing a story, and I don't really feel that connection to the characters. Because I think, you know, even if you write 4,000 or 5,000 words, I mean, there's still a lot that you could say about these people. And
sure.
Sometimes you can't squeeze it all in to a given mm-hmm. story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, often by the nature of it being these being short stories, there is the potential to do that. Mercy and Sunil, have you ever continued or, you know, written about characters in multiple stories?
Yeah. And actually, the first story that I ever sold and the first one that got published was a story called Empusa. It takes place in ancient Greece. And it was written specifically for a male-male-female menage anthology. And so I had written this one story, and I knew that that same publisher was also having a female-female vamps anthology coming out later. So I actually wrote the first story with the possibility of having a tied-in second story if the first one sold, and it did. So then I wrote the second one, and they bought that one too. and that was really interesting because the first story is written in Empusa's first-person perspective from her point of view, and she's a demon. And she has a really, really interesting voice, really fun character. I really enjoyed writing her. And when I wanted to do the second story, I wanted to start it from her point of view again. And I tried it a couple of times, and it just didn't work. And I ended up having starting over with Sophia, who is the human in that story, with her point of view, and because I realized it was her story. And Empusa's point of view just wouldn't work for it.
I think that's really interesting, just the aspect of having to revise, because I think people sometimes think, oh, you just write it and you're done. And sometimes, for me, sometimes I do write it and I'm done and I send it in, but often I get stuck. I tend to get stuck on tense. I'll start it in the present tense and then I'll slip into the past tense and then I can't figure out which one I want to keep. And that's very challenging. I wouldn't recommend it because you really have to change almost every word, especially if you've written, you know, hundreds of them in one tense, and unless you can figure out a way to keep them both. But I think it really does, you know, the point of view or the tense or the, you know, if there's some other major element you're changing, it changes the story. But I think it also gives you room to, you know, if you like the parts that are in the past tense, like you might feel that, not repeat the same lines, not steal it, but use that premise or use parts of what you couldn't use in one story in another story. Like, I don't think there's ever anything, you know, wasted per se, because it all kind of helps you flesh it out. Tennille, I think you were going to answer the repeated characters question. Have you ever done that?
Yes. Actually, in your anthology, Glamour Girls, Kim Fenton erotica, I wrote Dressing Desire about a dressmaker who was making a dress for a girl getting married. And the ending to that story was kind of open. And what made me go on to another story with those same characters was that the ending was so open. And I found that even though I was the one writing the story, I wanted to know what happened. And I was very interested in the characters, so I ended up writing things between about their continuing lesbian affair, because that's what ended up happening between them. And things between, you published that one as well in Ultimate Sunday, you and Christopher Pierce. So it wasn't an intentional thing, but I was happy with it.
Was writing the second story easier than the first because you kind of, you knew a little bit about, or you knew more about the characters? Or was it?
I'm sorry. It was very interesting. I felt like I knew the characters already. I felt like the background was already there, and I also felt that there were so many possibilities, you know, in where to go with those characters. So it was definitely easier, and I actually started writing a third with the same characters, but I never did anything with it.
Cool. I also think something you can do, and obviously, I mean, you can't use someone else's words without their permission, but something I've assigned in workshops is, you know, if there's a story that you've read that you feel really speaks to you, you can, you know, use that as a prompt to kind of think about what would you do if you were, you know, either the main character or another character. And there's a story that I really, really like. in my anthology, Pacing Her, and it's by Jen Cross, and it's called Queen of Sheba. And I really, the voice in it, I can't go into all of it right now, but the voice in it is just this very distinct, fascinating voice of this woman, and she's talking about this former lover, and all, you know, while I was reading it, I was really fascinated by her, but then I was fascinated by this person who you never hear from directly, but I wanted to know, like, what's his story, and, you know, and I think that's something you can use other, you know, or whether it's erotica or not, like, you know, you can use characters not taking, you know, someone else's character, but using that as a prompt to think about, you know, someone, you know, that you're creating and sort of mix and match, like, elements of the person that you've already been contemplating with this, you know, a scenario that you're inspired by. We have another caller. I'm going to bring them on. Hello?
Hi, this is Elizabeth.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Elizabeth Daniels, right? Hi, welcome.
Yes. Hi, thank you.
We have been chatting about all sorts of erotica topics. Now, Elizabeth, you were on the first chat we did, and you also have stories in Gotta Have It and Best Bondage Erotica 2011. Can you tell us a little bit about The Rainmaker, your bondage story, and what it's about and what inspired it, and anything else you want to say about it?
Essentially, it's about a wife who has done what quite a few of us, I think, managed to do, which is we get so wrapped up in our everyday world and we get so driven by success and by achieving, and it gets so terribly busy that we end up starting not to be able to have successful sex anymore. And actually, the inspiration for it was a friend of mine who is in some ways very like my protagonist, Amy. She's just one of the most amazingly busy people I've ever known. And I've always admired how she juggles everything. She's one of those people who just seems to make it all seem effortless. And we met for one day for coffee at Starbucks, and she was apparently having a very challenging week, and she was telling me about it. And right in the middle of the whole conversation, she says, you know, I'm really tired of taking responsibility for my orgasms. And I know, it was just, which was great because it was in the middle of a Starbucks in a fairly conservative area, so you can imagine. And she has a rather loud voice. So we got quite a few interesting looks. And by the way, I bought her a latte when the story sold. But it really got me thinking, because how in the world do you get in a rut like that? And what do you do? We have so much responsibility on us anymore as women. You know, we're responsible for everything. Sometimes you just need a distraction, and that's exactly what happens in this particular story. You have a husband and wife who have been trying to, more or less, to recapture a spark, and they do it by doing something different.
I think that's really interesting, too, because something that I look for in all my books, but especially for something like this, like the topic of bondage, which I'm doing the 2012 edition right now, so you can get the call for that either at the Erotica Readers and Writers Association. And we're putting up all the links that we're giving out on the Blog Talk Radio URL, but you can also get it at my site at rachelclaymerbussell.com/submissions.php. But what I wanted to say was that I really look for stories that bring out the mental element as well as the physical, because I feel like you can't really understand or get into the physical unless you know, why the people are doing what they're doing and what they're getting out of it and their personal dynamic. And I think that's a really important element that sometimes people they kind of gloss over because they're so eager to get to the physical part. I don't know if any of you want to touch on that aspect of writing and the kind of balancing of the motivation versus the action or the mental versus physical, because I think that's something all of you have done well, you know, and that I think that if you get the motivation right, then it makes the physical part of it even hotter.
Mm-hmm.
does anyone, that wasn't really a question, but does anyone have a comment on that?
Well, I think that when you're writing kind of any kind of, even if it's not kinky erotica, but I think especially when you're writing kinky erotica, you really have to get into the mental game, because otherwise it's just, you know, it's not even a stroke story, because it's not even, you know, it's not engaging you if you're not mentally into it. And it's like the story that I wrote for Please Sir, which is the Sub Fairy, which is a story about a couple who, you know, hadn't ever had any problems in the bedroom, but one of them decides that they're, you know, this would be fun. And a lot of the story is really there, is the main character's mental state. It's really, and you know, a lot of it isn't even about the actual, you know, sex at the time. A significant portion of the story is her, you know, they're at a Halloween party, and her husband is talking to some friends, and she's just sitting at his feet, and they're having a sexual encounter that has absolutely nothing to do with, you know, touching each other or anything. That's completely mental, and that was what made that story interesting. And if you just had it that they were, you know, in a room with a bunch of people having sex, well, that's not that exciting.
Yeah, and I think something else that, you know, to think about for people listening, you know, I can say that for me as an editor, certainly when I'm reading story upon story upon story about a given topic, you know, the physical element of it can get very old very fast if there isn't something that makes it stand out. And some of that is just the nature of, you know, reading about the same topic again and again. But I think that, you know, you have to really look at what is driving the people and bring that out. Because, you know, two people, I always think of it as, you know, if I'm like standing in a room and watching, you know, like say one couple over there doing something and one couple over there doing the same thing, what could be happening for them might be totally different than what I'm seeing, because I'm not seeing what's in their head. And mm-hmm. and I think, you know, and also, you know, what's going on to the top versus the bottom. I mean, that is something that I try to balance, especially in the kinky books. I mean, some of them are themed around one side of that, but, you know, for something like Best Bondage Erotica, I do try to balance that, because I think that there is this natural inclination to write from the bottom point of view, and I get a lot of stories from that point of view, and that's fine. But I think, you know, a way to mix it up is to try to think about the other side. And, you know, sometimes people can bring both of those sides in within one story, or maybe that's two different stories, like we were talking about. Like maybe you're going to repeat characters, but do it from a different person's point of view in another kind of context. We have another caller, so I'm going to bring them on. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes,
hello?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Hi.
My name is Susanna Mayer. Emerald knows me from the Erotic Literary Salon.
Hi, in Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia, yes. And
hello,
it's very,
welcome.
Thank you. It's very fortuitous. I went on Facebook because I was going to post some information, and there you were. And the information I'm posting is I've been asked to write a section in the Encyclopedia of Human Sexuality, and there was a whole long list that I could have chosen from. But they had left out erotic writing groups and reading groups, and I thought, this is happening. This is happening all over. I want to write about it. So the professor who had asked me to write about it said, sure, go ahead, run with it. So here I am going, I want to write not only about groups like mine that meet in person, but also on the web. This is happening all over. So that's one thing I wanted to say. And the other thing is, I want to put out there to all you writers of erotica that you're welcome to come to my salon and read. That's number two. And the third thing, based on the person who just called in, I'm in the process of putting together a book proposal. Emerald is part of my dream team here. And And one of the part of my book that will be a little different is I'm a sexologist. I'm not writing it from a writer's perspective. There'll be a lot of submissions at some point where people will write in their words. But I will be talking about the benefits of erotica. And you're discussing one of several benefits. So here I am on the phone telling you all this information.
Thank you. That's very interesting. Can you tell us when your salon meets and where people can get more information about it?
Oh, certainly. The salon meets the third Tuesday of every month at a place called the Bohemian Absinthe Lounge, which is part of
Time. I love that name.
Isn't it great? It's part of Time Restaurant. It's on the second floor. And Emerald can tell you what it looks like, but it really does have a great feel. And you can get more information at the website www.philadelphiaculturalsalons.com. And my reason for changing the name on the web is that the internet censors. And if it's really terrible, but the Erotic Literary Salon was getting censored out of a lot of places, so I just decided go for another name on the web. It is bizarre, but that's, you know, I'm going with what's out there.
Cool. Well, thank you for calling in. I think doing readings is a really good way to just hear your words in a different way and to connect with other people. But, I mean, I think for me, I still get nervous, but you know, I think reading your work out loud, even if it's just to yourself, I mean, that's a different thing. But reading it out loud does bring out things that you just, even if you've read it five times on the page, you will hear it very differently when you start to read it out loud. So it's something I don't always do myself, but I do encourage other people to do.
Well, it is wonderful. I encourage people like yourself who have been published to come, and quite often I'll feature you as a presenter. So people who have been published, you know, automatically get that. But those are filled up months in advance. But I also encourage people who have never written, like myself, to come and write, even if it's just to share their email correspondence with a lover. And because I really want to encourage people to write erotica, because I'd like to normalize it. I'd like to mainstream it. I'd like to make it part of people's sensuality and sexuality experience, which you are doing by doing this book club, which I think is fabulous.
Thank you. So I think it's something that a lot of people, you know, have some interest in. And that doesn't, that interest, I mean, we've been talking about publishing your work, but that is not the only way or reason to be writing erotica. And I think sometimes people can write things down and both find out about their own desires and share something that might be much harder or impossible to articulate, you know, live on the spot in person. And I think there's ways that you can do that, whether it's via correspondence or in the guise of fiction, you know. And I think also the benefit of fiction is that it doesn't have to be so literal. It doesn't have to mean that you wrote a story about X activities, which means you want to do that right now, right away. You know, maybe it just means you want to talk about it. Maybe you want to have a conversation about it or just think about it or just, you know, get a feel on what the other person thinks about it. And all of those are valid, you know, things to do. And I think sometimes people kind of censor themselves before they've even gotten to the first word because they think, what will it mean if I write this? Like, who will I be and what will that say about me? And, you know, you don't have to show it to anyone if what you write winds up being something that, for whatever reason, you don't want to show to anyone, you know. And maybe you'll write it and you'll think, I love this. I want to send it, you know, out into the world. You know, I think there really is, with all writing, an element of surprise often, you know, and you can surprise yourself. Even if you have an outline, like even if you think you know where it's going, you don't always know where it's going.
And that's a really interesting point to make, and I hope you don't mind if at some point I may just quote you on that, for my I put in a book proposal. This is my first book. I know you're on, I'm not sure how many books, but it's in the proposal stage. And I will be talking about the reasons to write and read erotica. The first part of my book will be from a sexological perspective. And then I will be putting in a call for submissions, and that I'll put out to all you people. And didn't I notice that only, you know, I'm just going by voice, only women are talking on this talk show? Where are the men?
That is true. We did have a man last time. You know, that question comes up a lot. I mean, I would say the majority of the people who submit to my books, I mean, I wouldn't just say it's true. Probably, off the top of my head, 75% people who are submitting to my books, possibly more, are women. I mean, I certainly encourage men to be writing erotica, and I wish there were more men writing erotica. And I think there are a subset of men. I mean, there are men writing erotica, but I think that by and large, it's a very female field. And I don't.
Interesting, because I have to tell you that's not the case at the salon. Half men, half women, and that is interesting. I'm not sure where that comes from.
Are the men who come to the salon, are they actually reading, or are they there to listen?
Oh, no. I'd say at any given time, you know, from month to month, it is so different. So it's anywhere from 50 to 75% men reading or women reading. There really is nothing I can say that's typical. And that's what makes it so wonderfully unique.
That is fabulous.
Yeah, it is fabulous. And, you know, I'd like to say maybe I have a little bit to do with it, but it's probably Philadelphia also. It's hard to say, but really wonderful. Yes?
We have to start wrapping up today's talk, so I wanted to thank everyone for being with us. And if you go to blogtalkradio.com, and if you can't find it, look up RKB Online Book Club. You will find everyone's URLs and more information about the books we've been discussing. And we are going to be doing several more of these talks, some on weekends, some on weekdays. And so if you're interested in calling in to a future one, or authors, if you would like to share something, you can contact me at rachelkimmerbussell@gmail.com. I'd like to thank all our guests today, Susanna Mayer, Emerald, Mercy Loomis, Elizabeth Daniels, and Tamil Brown. Thank you all.
Thank you
for having me.
Thank you.
It was great.
It was great meeting everyone.
Yes, it's lovely to talk, Brooklyn. And thanks for calling in, Susanna. It's lovely to hear from you.
Oh, it's good to hear your voice.
Yes,
you've got lots of emails waiting
and
for you.
I'm looking forward to checking out your show.
Thank you.
Left you on a debris at the Sunday morning market. You were starting to the odds and ends. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door. Gosh, you knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. is more trouble.